Got it, got it. Okay, yeah. So we'll do the intro.
So let's do an intro, yeah.
All right, let us know when we can start introducing. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, cookbook author, and cookbook publisher.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, assistant professor of Italian at Dartmouth College and writer at large for Wine Enthusiasts covering Tuscany and the Italian South. And this is Gola.
Hey, Danielle.
Hey, Katie. How's it going?
I'm so good. Thanks for asking. I'm well. Thanks for asking.
I know.
Don't want to get emails from the grammar police because that's a real thing.
The sound of our voices and what are other things that people get mad at women talking about? So many things. I am, speaking of grammar police, about to get back to school. So I have to think about
your new trapper keeper.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? Still have those?
I don't know. I don't know.
I looked at our producer, like,
Becca, are there trapper keepers?
Becca, leave the studio. Don't follow this podcast. Just go handle some trapper keeper. That's what we're here for. I do need new colored pencils. I need stickers. I need all of the new school supplies that I can get my hands on. But more than anything,
I need a three-hole punch. I love those.
I used a binder until pretty recently. Like all the notes for my dissertation and I guess it's not that recently anymore. Let's not do the math. Yeah. Yikes. I would say that most of my school supplies is now simply my iPad.
Do you know what the funniest Italian office supply to me is?
What, the notebooks that are at Esse Lunga, like Bufala? Yeah.
No, the plastic sleeve. I can't receive a sheet of paper.
No, you got to put it in a sleeve.
It's got to be in a sleeve.
Everything's,
and I was like, I don't want
a sleeve. No.
And it's not my choice.
Oh, absolutely not. You're not walking out of here with a naked piece of paper like a pervert.
I know.
I mean, I'm not surprised you're trying to, but they're not going to allow it.
There's a tobacco shop downstairs from my house that also is an Amazon point, and they have like
gum. Almost went on vacation in Molise with them. You left me once too long, and I was nearly betrothed to one of their cousins.
They're from Molise.
Yeah.
They receive all my mail basically because if the Poste Italiane had to deliver mail to me ever in my life, I would never receive a piece of mail, but if I put my address as the tobacco shop. So yeah. I'm spending a lot of time with them. And also, they have printing services. So I'll be like, can you print this? And it'll be a single sheet of paper that's like a W-9 or whatever. And they will freaking sleeve it up.
Yeah.
And then I'll take the paper out of the sleeve and leave it with them. And they are fuming.
Yeah.
I'm trying to save them money because the sleeve probably costs more than I paid to get the thing printed.
Yeah, yeah.
The hell?
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So this is surprisingly not the subject of our podcast
today.
Well,
you know what? I was thinking about it. And the reason why I was thinking about back to school, not only because of grammar police, but also because in my school year, during the academic year, you and I were just talking about how we have in the past historically concentrated a lot of our travel over the summer. Both for all the reasons that everybody does. We have more flexibility at that time. Other people also travel then. So if you're meeting up with friends and family, it makes sense. Everywhere in the world uses their summer as a vacation time, even if it might be flipped on the calendar. They still imagine that as the time to holiday. And even with your case where you're doing tours over the summer, so one side of it is other people on vacation and you aiding them and having the best experience. You and I use that time because warm weather has always been the time where you imagine you'll enjoy yourself the most. It's the kind of vision of vacation that we're looking for. But of course, two things. One, as we just discussed, the world's on fire, literally, and I'm using the word literally correctly. So we...
It's pronounced literally.
Literally. And simultaneously, we have lived through a global pandemic, which means that our work schedules are a little bit more flexible than they once were. I realize that doesn't go for everyone. And
wait, yours is flexible?
Yeah. Well, both of us, I think, live a life where from the outside, people think we're always on vacation. And from the inside, we both feel like I haven't slept since 2013. Oh, so something somewhere in between that is the truth. But one thing
if there wasn't Always Sunny reruns on every single minute, then I would get a nap in.
I'd see. You are such a TV addict.
I love it.
It's so true. Every time I wake up in the morning, I'm like, did you get some sleep? And you're like, no, I did have to watch the entire season of whatever new shows on Netflix that I didn't even know existed yet. And by the end of that day, then I've learned that it is actually popular, that you made it popular by watching it the night before.
Influencing the algorithm.
Exactly.
I love my crime stories.
I know. She loves her stories. But even with my academic schedule being a little bit less flexible than other people's, because when school's on, there's no going anywhere, I do have breaks that aren't during the summer. And given the way weather and climate has been changing, it seemed high time to think about how to make the most of the moments in my calendar year that are not aligning with the summer when it's too hot to do anything. Once again, leaving aside whether you care or not about the future of the planet, simply comfort is on the line here. So with that in mind, Italy is a mild place, and you and I have also had the pleasure of traveling off-season. We've often, I think, recommended it to people, but we thought we'd talk today a little bit about the things that we love the most about travel in not summer in Italy, and especially, I think, in what most people would think of as the coldest and dreariest time of year, which can be really a lot of fun.
I'm sitting here looking at the high and low temperature average in Cagliari in January, and it's 58 and 42. That's a Jersey fall.
That is as mild and pleasant as it can get. That's a light jacket.
Sun is shining. And what I love about Sardinian travel, now granted, the temperature is also influenced by microclimates and altitude. So the places I love to go in Sardinia tend to be the coastal ones in the winter. Because it's so effing hot in the summertime, it's not pleasant to go swimming in the summer often. It's much nicer to go swimming in the winter. Nobody is on board with this, I can tell. But like I was in Baune last winter, and I went in the water, and it felt like going in the Pacific Ocean in the summertime. Like, yeah. It's not that cold. And you're alone, which is maybe not safe, but that's fine. And it's just, it's so special to be able to, like, get a Sardinian swim in at the Epiphany. You know, like, yeah. it's amazing. The food also, pretty delicious and bomb in the wintertime. Lots of porky things, all sorts of lambs, lots of cheeses. And I just love it. And if you're looking for a destination in Sardinia in general, the one place that's not open in the winter is the place that sucks the most, the Costa Smeralda. Don't go there at all, ever. It's dumb. But all of the other many, many hundreds of zillions of places are cool. And though Cagliari and Alghero and Oristano tend to have pretty temperate climates, there's one really dope place that's pretty chilly in the winter, but if you go in January, it's fine because they're going to have bonfires around which all of these carnival figures are going to be dancing and prancing. I'm talking about Mamoiada in the Barbagia, super famous. Well, they call it carnival, but it's pre-carnival, and it's not actually something that's linked to any type of Catholic religious festivities, but instead the sort of cycles of life and death symbolized through agriculture. And if you go to Mamoiada year round, you can see them carving all the slightly problematic masks. But if you go in January, you can actually see the festivals taking place. And it's really amazing and really special. And every single group of these like dancing, prancing figures has to stop and dance around a bonfire in the town. And so it takes all night and people are eating and drinking. Well, that, I mean, people are always drinking in Sardinia constantly, 24/7. So this is maybe not, maybe that part is not unique.
It's a selling point for me as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
But that is, that's one of my favorite like January places, Sardinia in general, and specifically Mamoiada and Cagliari.
Well, I think you brought up two things that I wanted to point to for the kind of top-selling ideas of winter travel in Italy. One is this podcast, if you're listening, is about Italian food and how much we love eating it, first and foremost, right? And the best time for that is in the winter when you can actually enjoy everything equally. You can still have your crudo if you want and your citrus salads and all of that. In fact, citrus is coming up fresh only at that time, so all the better. But you can actually have all of the fatty pork products, the intense stinky cheeses, the roasted meats of particularly the gamey ones that are the most representative of the lesser visited areas and – or the – I should say places that haven't adapted a cuisine to a tourist population that is unfamiliar with certain products. All of that is at its best in the winter and you're at your best to absorb it at that time because you're not sweating and exhausted and feeling a little bit nauseated by the constant level of dehydration that you're pushing back against.
And I have one word for the unconvinced: artichokes.
Well, winter seasonal vegetables and products in general are really fantastic in Italy. That's for sure. I say that as somebody who has suffered through several New Hampshire winters now. Your CSA in the Northeast is bringing you a lot of turnips.
You got beets.
And a lot of other tubers and root vegetables. And you can be excited about them. You can make the most out of them, no question. Anything fresh and local is always going to be going to deliver more nutrition and hopefully more pleasure than the forcing of some product that doesn't reflect the space or the season. But when it comes to, you know, being a little bored through the winter months elsewhere, that's not at all the case in Italy. You have your artichokes, you have the citrus. I mean, if you want to go to Sicily during a winter, you can partake in the citrus harvest, which is fantastic and also a great way to remember that oranges, lemons, and grapefruits are just the tip of the iceberg. So much more diverse citrus being produced and enjoyed there that doesn't get grown in industrial quantities for the international market. And then so many other things. I mean, what else do you eat in Italy in the winter, Katie?
Shout out to Culinary Breeding Network for putting this on the map in the U.S., but everyone in Italy knows you got to go radicchio. Get that radicchio, which is a pretty big category. It's a series of chicories. Some look like roses. Some look like sort of funny fuchsia and white fingers. Some just look like the radicchio you get at Whole Foods, same variety.
But some's regular.
Some's just regular. But, you know, I would say I generally discourage travel to Venice, except like December to March. And that's just because if you're in Venice and you haven't had seasonal radicchio, you haven't really experienced the city's cuisine. Not to mention that that's when the Fondo di Carciofo, which is the sort of excavated heart of the artichokes that are grown, are in absolutely every market and absolutely every table. It's such a special time. Plus, Venice is at its most magical when the weather is the shittiest. When it's misty or rainy, it is so cool. It is like, it's the best place ever. But when it's hot, it's not that cool.
I was about to say that. I think probably one of my – this sounds banal enough because it's still Venice at the end of the day. But one of my favorite places to travel within Italy is Venice, specifically in late December through February, when it seems like a weird thing to say, but the hours of daylight are really limited. So the light is wild during the time that the sun is up. And then fog rolls in and is so thick that in a city where you could already, at least theoretically, get lost really easily, although the main tourist channels are so carved out that it becomes actually kind of the opposite of that. You're just moved along with the flux of people. Instead becomes a place where you can really get lost and feel alone and maybe scared also, but in a great way, in the way that you're supposed to when you travel somewhere that you don't know about. And it's fantastic. Yeah.
Let Venice frighten you.
Well, and I would say I feel obliged also to add to the question of what makes anywhere Venice or anywhere else on the peninsula exciting during the winter. If food is even better when it's cold and your body is ready for more calories, wine, similarly, is delivering at 110% during that time. I am a big, and on this podcast and in the other channels that I publish or am heard through, the message I have been giving to everyone is how great lighter bodied reds and white wines and sparklings are in Italy right now. And I stand by that firmly. But it is still very much the case that the most carefully constructed and heavily invested wines in Italy are reds. And with that in mind, if you want to enjoy something that has an extracted full body and a high alcohol content, then you're going to want to have that when it's cool enough out for your body to need that kind of alcohol and that caloric content. Once again, if you're drinking a 15% alcohol red and it's 110 degrees outside, you're not going to receive it well. It's not a question of being able to extrapolate what it might taste like or making sure that it's served at the right service temperature or making sure that you're in an air-conditioned room. Your body is going to heat up because that's what alcohol does to it. And you're not going to be able to derive the pleasure from it that you ought to, as opposed to, for example, if you're in a foggy, charming, cold Venice, wrapped up with all of the delicious treats we just talked about and some of the beautiful wines that come from that area of the Northeast that are specifically known for the concentration of berries that they add.
You know where I want to drink red wine?
Tell me.
In the winter. So the Friulan, like, Dolomites and up in the other Dolomites, I guess the Alto Adigino Dolomites,
mm-hmm, yeah.
South Tyrol, there are so many cool, like, wooden lodge properties that have saunas and things, and they're just kind of, like, great for hot meats, okay. Cheeses,
yes.
Some, like, rye-based breads and red wine.
Absolutely. And speaking of those areas, I don't think it'll be a surprise to anybody who's listening to this podcast because they're probably at least aware of the fact that the north of Italy gets cold and snowy, that there's a very elaborated ski culture in those areas. But as you're saying, I think less people are aware of the fact that there's just sort of an exciting and bustling winter tourism apparatus that isn't just about high-end ski resorts.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, especially like, you know, I spend some time in Venice and all the Venetians that I know, their holiday houses are in the mountains,
right?
They don't want to be near the water. They get that every day. Yeah. They want to be in the mountains and they're not skiing. They're just like kicking it. They're next to a fire. They're roasting meats. Maybe some of them score some game from the local butcher or the neighbor. And it's just, it's really a fun and beautiful thing. And it snows and it's great. It's great.
Yeah. So I think what we've outlined now with just our kind of quick examples are that you can really have it both ways, which is another huge selling point for travel in the off season in Italy. Because if you're into a snowy, charming, romantic mountain vacation, you can definitely have that. And you can indulge, eat too much, drink too much wine, snuggle up, be next to a fire. You can also ski and do winter sports if you're into that, but it's totally not obligatory. They have lots of other activities. But then you can also, as you said, go to some of the coastal areas that we love during the summer too, but that are super mild and incredibly pleasant. And once upon a time, these things actually weren't happening as often or as widely because the way that people moved around was so much more intensely seasonal and less flexible. So again, speaking of some of the silver linings of what's happening with climate change and post-pandemic life in Italy is that once upon a time, I actually talked to several winemakers. Just recently, I was at a meeting with a few people who have places that I would have imagined closed seasonally, and they would have. In fact, Venice used to be a city where after mid-November, it was pretty hard to find a tourist lodging, whatever kind you wanted. You needed to have a house or a friend to host you because hotels would tend to close while tourists weren't coming for the season. Now, most people don't do that. In part, they can't really afford it. They need to make whatever money they can all year round, in part because people move differently and don't vacation all at the same time, and in part because, for better or worse, mostly worse, but in this case, perhaps a mild glimmer of hope, for better, there is the likelihood that the weather will be really mild during those weeks where it once might have gotten a little bit colder and less pleasant. And so you were talking about swimming before. I got a barrage of Merry Christmas messages last year and Happy New Year messages last year from friends in Sicily, in the Cilento, and other places in the south, all jumping in the water for a swim before lunch to feel refreshed and then dry off and have a big long meal. So
obsessed.
I mean, obviously, I was envious in every way, but can you imagine having – it's a true having your cake and eating it too kind of moment. So this is a positive corollary to our doom and gloom episode on how Italy is suffering right now. And another very tangible and specific way that you can push back and offer something good to the people and the places that you like and want to become closer to.
Yeah. So I was just thinking of the sort of litany of cities that I've really loved traveling in the winter, even if just for a weekend. Lecce, Bari, Termoli, Palermo, Catania. We've hit Cagliari a couple hundred times.
Right.
Napoli, Salerno. Bro, Salerno's so cute in the
winter. Absolutely. Beautiful any time of year, but absolutely charming in the off season because it is on the small side. So a place that is a perfect example of when you visit and it's high season and it feels overwhelming and hot, you might not experience it in a very positive light. And then right, you go in the off season and it's so beautiful. It's very well maintained also.
Yeah. And Naples is the most fun in the winter, not just around the Christmas holiday when all the like insane nativity scenes are going down in the Centro Storico. But remember, like some of the best things to eat there are fried pizza, fried bechamel-bound macaroni cakes, fried bechamel-bound potato croquettes. And so those things feel like a lot more fun to eat in the wintertime. And I love going down to Naples for like a week and then just using it as a base to go to the Campi Flegrei, hitting Pozzuoli, Boccoli. Going to Pompeii when there are no people around is amazing.
I was just about to say, I mean, the great ancient sites of Italy in particular, which are at the same time the great medieval or early modern sites, the things that you and I actually got involved in are all the work that we do through our study of, are all places that are absolutely excruciating to visit in the summer. I mean, how both of us have so many times been just, you know, holding on for dear life as our body, our organs shut down while we're trying to explain to somebody some important site or some important piece of art that we're genuinely extremely excited about and have a great passion for and have spent so much time learning more and more about to share with them. And not being able to bring any enthusiasm because everyone is just exhausted by heat and also by the constant presence of people pressing up against you. I mean, turn around, Pompeii in January is absolutely spectacular. Very few people. It's a city. It's a city like any other. So it's if it's not way, way too hot, you will love it all the more.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love it so much. Rome is really busy this winter. So even though I love Rome and I'd love it if everyone listening did a tour with me, I would say if you're planning like a winter trip, we just listed all these cool places. Rome, I have been tricked into going to the Vatican Museums a couple of times this past winter. And I was imagining that it would be like really chill and cool and empty, and it wasn't, and I was pissed off.
I know.
But
well, I have I think this has already come up before, but we have a special distaste for the Vatican museums because they're a complex that have, I think the turn of phrase, more money than God is appropriate here. And they do not invest at all in improving the quality of the museum. And it has very little didactic material or guidance and is really poor at moving the quantity of people who come through there. So I
How do you say milk it till it's dead in Latin?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think one of our ongoing messages is – yeah, of course. Come to Rome, come to Florence, see everything. Well, not yours. Okay, what, mine. But add to it these other places. And maybe even better yet, use the outside as the home base rather than the inside when it comes to those major places, right? Rather than saying, okay, we're staying in Rome for 2 weeks and we'll do day trips from there. Say, we're going to pick a place outside of the city and enjoy seeing things that we might not have otherwise. And then we can do day trips into the city anytime we like, because, of course, all roads lead to Rome while we're on aphorisms today. So you will never have problem getting back to the center, whereas getting to see the things outside of it always require a little more effort.
That's right. I think it would be fun to do a couple days in Genova this winter, too.
Love Genova in the winter. I think it is. Well, first of all, great example of one of the wildly underrated places in Italy that almost no one ever goes to. No idea why. It's also because position-wise, it would be convenient if you're trying to visit Piemonte, which if you like wine and truffles, which a lot of my understanding is people are into.
Too under the radar.
Right, exactly. Right. Right. Barolo and truffles. I'm sure you haven't heard of them, but please look into it. I think that we mentioned already, you know, coastal areas are places that people don't tend to visit, especially in the cold weather months. And they're so much fun and they're always kind of spooky in this really, really alluring way.
I love haunted cities. They're my favorite cities.
Well, maybe that's what we should – maybe that's what this year is for. We've talked a lot about maybe organizing some kinds of trips together for the many people who have traveled with each of us separately. And maybe our trips will be spooky, scary, dark cities that you wouldn't go to by yourself. We have to hold hands, all of us, while we're there. That'll be what we offer. Yeah. Well, Katie, what's your next trip before we wrap?
I am going to Sardinia. I am taking a delightful couple through the island. We're going to hit some very special places to me. Walter Ussai's ceramic laboratorio, the Pizzalis family copper laboratorio, my friend Antonio, who's this incredible chef and is about to launch his own restaurant. In the meantime, is allowing us to enter his family's property, which is this like defunct trattoria that hopefully will become his trattoria eventually. And we're going to make culorgiones and fragola, and we're just going to have such a special time before heading up to the Barbagia to Mamoyada for some spectacular vino and just some really weird vibes. And I can't freaking wait.
Well, I love the sound of that, and I'm envious, of course, but I can't be too jealous because I too have – I actually have all of my go-to spots on deck for the post-summer travel of the early fall in this case before we get into winter.
What you got cooking?
I'm going to be in the Tuscan countryside and then in
– Anything good?
They have a couple of things there, yeah. A couple of things.
Yeah.
I'll let you know what I find. I hear they're making some wine. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to be in Sicily in Marsala, which is my my new passion project.
I love Marsala.
I do love Marsala. I want people to spend more time in Marsala. Speaking of sustainability, a wine that was designed to be able to travel without refrigeration and that does not require air traffic. So just an idea, guys. Stays delicious forever. And then I'm going to revisit Etna before I make it to Puglia and hop back around. So I'll be doing a little roundup of all my favorites, no cities. And I think that's a lie. I will get maybe a breakfast in Rome and maybe one meal in Florence, but that's about it. In the countryside, yes, I will, of course. And I will be hopefully taking advantage of exactly the things that we've been talking about once the term ends at Dartmouth and I have my winter break.
Exciting. Can't wait to see you.
Look forward to it. Arrivederci.
Ciao.
If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to like, follow, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice, and to become a patron on our Patreon, patreon.com/golapod. You can also follow us on Instagram at Dr. Caligari's Cabinet and at Katie Parla.